So many people, since we spoke about that on the program last week about hay fever, have made contact or met them or bumped into them, or they've pulled me up and said, I have hay fever. It seems to be very prevalent this time of year. Now, the comment lines are all open. You might remember on Friday morning last, we had Deputy Michael Fitzmaurice, and he was just dead honest about a number of things. And he was talking, and you might have heard on local news afterwards as well, he was talking about the culling of the beef industry here because of global gases and all that. And during that, he made a statement in relation to the amount of meat that's coming in from other countries into this country and is being used. When the ICSA have demanded answers on beef imports, and the ICSA beef chair Edmund Graham joins me on the line. But he's called for the meat industry to explain why vast quantities of beef are being imported into this country and where is it ending up. And he joins me on the line. Edmund, good morning to you.
Good morning, Keith.
Thanks for joining us today. Michael Fitzmaurice referred to this during his interview with us on Friday morning last, that there's a huge amount of beef coming in from South America and elsewhere into this country. And where is it ending up, do you know?
This is what we want to get to the bottom of in ICSA. We know it's been coming in for a long number of years. It's very frustrating for farmers now at the minute. We're getting it very hard to sell our product off the farm. Processors tell us sales of beef are down and consumers not buying it, this, that and the other. But yet and all, they're bringing in this imported beef, which they say, according to CSO figures, is mostly coming from the UK. But there lies the issue too. We know UK prices are well above Irish prices, so how can they afford to bring in a UK product? So is that product an actual UK product, or is it a product that has come into the UK from other countries, maybe Brazil, maybe other European countries, we don't know, and then has been moved on into Southern Ireland here to be sold again. It's very frustrating for farmers at the minute. We're being told by Bord Bia, by the meat factories, by the Department of Agriculture, we need to be have a quality assured product, and it has to be verified by Bord Bia, and that this is what the consumer is looking for, a quality assured product. Nearly the majority of farmers in Ireland are doing that at the minute, have a quality assured product, but yet and all, it seems to be that the consumer can buy a product that's not quality assured, and there's no worries. So it begs the question then, in turn, why are farmers going the extra mile to do all this, and when there's no gains, no benefits from it? So we need to get to the bottom of why all this beef is coming into the country.
But Edmund, can I ask you, and please don't give me names now, but where is this beef being sold? Because if you take our local butcher in Moycullen, he's buying legitimately. Say Tormey's in Galway Shopping Centre, Finnerty's, all the indigenous butchers, they're buying organically, in other words. But are you saying that some supermarkets are using this beef that's coming in under the guise of being Irish without naming anybody?
Well, this is what we don't know. Where is it going? This is the question we're asking. I have no knowledge of who's using it. I can't name you any names, for I don't know. But like, it has to be going someplace. It's going into the markets to be sold someplace.
Yeah, but the CSO figures that you're looking at today, 14,119 tons of beef was imported into Ireland in the first 3 months of this year, which is the equivalent of over 40,000 heads of Irish cattle. So 14,119 tons of beef was imported into Ireland, and it just evaporated into thin air and nobody knows where it went to?
Exactly. You haven't hit the nail on the head. Where is this product going, and what did it come in as? What country exactly did it come from? So we are calling on the Minister of Agriculture to find this information out and come to us. Like, it's, you know, when you think back over the years, we've had different scares, different products, different problems with different foods. And, you know, the Food Safety Authority now are all issuing warnings and taking products off the shelves for maybe salmonella or the likes of that, you know, different things. We have a product coming into the country. We're not sure if it's traceable or not. We're nearly sure that it's not. traceable. So why do we bring it in and jeopardise our own product? If something would go wrong with that product when it comes into the country, we're jeopardising our own Irish product, and it's to the detriment of the Irish farmers.
But Edmund, where does it disappear to is the big question here.
This is the, yes, I understand what you're saying, and we don't know.
It's called supply and demand. So somebody out there is making money on the back of supply and demand. Is it going into the catering trade? Is it going into, you know, other institutions that maybe aren't as monitored? I mean, it doesn't make sense that so much beef is coming into this island of Ireland. I mean, it has to come in by sea or by air. That's it. It just can't float across the Irish Sea from England. It has to go somewhere. So somebody somewhere has to buy it. And the price of meat is not getting any cheaper in this country. And yet the farmers are not getting any more money for it.
This is what we'll have to find out. Like, these people that are eventually buying this product, do they know what they're buying? Do they even care what they're buying? And if they don't care, like, why are we led to believe that it's so important for us to be having a quality assured product when the consumer really doesn't care? So we need to get these questions answered. And I think Minister McConnell is the only man that can answer this and tell us where this product is going.
I disagree with you.
I suppose there's a whole lot of different avenues for it to be going. As you say, the catering trade, different processors into maybe pies, different things like that. But still, you know, it needs to be answered. Where is it going?
I disagree with you that the consumer doesn't care. The consumer does care. I certainly would like to know where my chicken and where my beef or my lamb or my mince is coming from when I'm having dinner on a daily basis. And I would like to know that it is definitely flipping beef too, by the way, Edmund Graham.
This is it. Like, you know, farmers are consumers as well, and we have to buy products in the supermarkets, and I suppose farmers, by their nature, would want to know that, like yourself. But does the average consumer, do they really care? We don't know. It would be nice to think that they did, and, you know, but how do we find that out?
I don't know is the answer, but I mean, if it's been imported into this country, there has to be everything that's imported into this country can be tracked, for God's sake. Surely it can be. Surely give me the confidence that it can be, and that if it's going to a meat wholesaler or it's going to a food wholesaler or otherwise, that they can put their hand up and say, I got this from England, and somebody in England can say that came in from South America. Because, I mean, Michael Fitzmaurice was very strong on it last Friday morning on the programme. Rather than culling our herd, let's stop the beef and product that's coming in from South America. Just his thing on that is just stop it. But we're not going to solve it today, Edmund Graham. You've left a question very open. We need to figure that out.
Yes, and I would ask the Department of Agriculture, the Minister of Agriculture, to start in and give us answers. Find out where the product does go when it comes into Ireland. Like, it, you know, it shouldn't, everything has to be traceable nowadays. Computer systems, you know, the top of the keyboard should bring up the details.
Of course
so,
it
does. You know, but come back to us. Let us know what's happening, Minister.
But do you think, though, Graham, and I'm Edmund Graham, and do you think that if I rocked up with a big refrigerated van to some of the restaurants in Galway City or anywhere indeed in the country, and I was trying to sell meat out of the back of a van that had been imported, and we don't know where it's going to, that somebody would buy it off me? They will not, because they're subject.
Well, maybe if you're prepared to sell it cheap enough, maybe they would.
And I don't have a van, so I won't be doing it. Listen, thank you for joining us today. It's an interesting conversation that we're having. Edmund Graham, thank you for joining us today. On Friday, where was I? Oh yeah, I know where I was in town. And I grabbed a bottle of water off a shelf in a shop and brought it outside and I threw it in the car and I was drinking it. And whatever way I was stuck in traffic, I looked at the bottle. It was imported from Germany. Now, it looked very much like an Irish brand, I have to say. So that's what I thought I had in my hand from the filling station. And while I was looking at it, I stuck it in traffic just the Westwood Junction there, which is getting very bad, by the way, in the afternoon and evening time. imported all the way from Germany. So if that's being sold in Ireland, coming all the way from Germany, and I know it's Europe and all that, but how much environmental damage was done to bring a 500 milliliter bottle by the thousands by road from Germany to Ireland to be distributed into one of the major chains? I only asked the question, and I'm only saying.
Galway Tolls, in association with Tesco. Find our award-winning Irish ranges in store and online at tesco.ie.
A very good morning to you. Welcome into today's programme on this Monday morning. Let me go to Anthony Skeffington, who's Regional Operations Manager for Uisce Éireann. And Uisce Éireann are urging communities in Galway to conserve water. We're just after coming in from a very warm spell, and it's continuing slightly this week as well. But Anthony joins you on the line. Anthony, good morning to you.
Good morning to you. Good morning to your listeners.
Thanks for joining us today on the programme. Talk to me about Galway and conservation. When you say conservation, we're talking about, this is fairly common sense stuff, but we have to reinforce it.
That's correct. And look, the country is going through a persistent spell of dry weather at the moment. In fact, Met Éireann has stated that it's the longest period of extended drought since 2018. And so in Uisce Éireann, we operate over 700 water treatment plants nationwide, supplying about 1.7 million metres cubed of water daily. And the majority of these plants are continuing to meet demand for water. However, there are a number affected by the drought conditions that's ongoing at the moment. Most customers in these areas have targeted restrictions to ensure water supplies can be provided to customers throughout the day. And generally, you know, just on drought, demand and the demand for water, demand increases due to generally more activity, especially during dry conditions.
Yeah.
People wash their cars more frequently. They use power hoses for cleaning outside. They shower, they bathe more. They probably water their gardens and flowers. And usually people and animals, especially animals out in the you know, out in the country and out in the farms, you know, they drink more as well. So this higher demand coupled with no rainfall causes difficulty for our sources as well as our treatment plants.
And is it something that could be looked at long term to have larger storage tanks or otherwise? Or am I just talking rubbish in this regard?
You're not really. And you know, that'll take, I suppose, an approach for everybody to buy into, you know, the use of water butts, you know, harvesting water and all that. That comes into play. I think given where we are as regards to climate change and that, I think every option has to be looked at and investigated and that. But generally, I think if people are informed about, you know, conservation tips and that, I think people usually respond. And we have found that previously, you know, at home. I think if people take shorter showers, you know, if there are dripping taps, you know, fix those, turn off the tap, you know, while brushing your teeth, simple things like that. If you need to wash your car, use a bucket and sponge. And, you know, in the garden, save and reuse water collected from baths or showers. And if you can at all, if you're in the garden and, you know, we don't want to be kind of enforcing stuff on people. You know, but you know, I think it's incumbent on people to be mindful about the use of water. You know, for example, if you're in the garden, use a rose head watering can or something to that effect, rather than the hose. And especially then on the farm, you know, I think I often see it. You know, a number of troughs where there might be a leaking trough and stuff like that. If those can be fixed, I think it would be really helpful. But that would be the general water conservation message and so simple tips. You know, for people to conserve water in a general way. I think you know, we do have leaks in our systems and that. And I think I think during dry weather as well, you know, the ground moves, the ground dries up and stuff like that, and leaks do occur probably more frequently. So it would be incumbent on people to report leaks to our customer care team. You know, 1850 278 278.
And so again, so if they, Anthony Skeffington, come across then a leak or otherwise, or if they have land that's a little bit away from home and that they haven't checked since the winter, since the frost, that maybe leaking in the middle of a field, they're all the things that will make a difference for everybody else to stop leakage and to stop wastage.
That's correct. And I think if it's the small things that count here, and I think it's habit and getting people into checking the troughs more often, you know, making sure that they, you know, keep an eye on how water is used throughout their, you know, their gardens, their homes, and also the farms and that, and just keep an eye out for leaks and stuff like that as well. Obviously, in Galway County at the moment, we are seeing an increase in demand for water, and some areas have very high demand. You know, we're seeing kind of an increase of about 17% on average, and that would be 17% above the average usage across the county. So so to help manage that, you know, manage the water supply, we have placed restrictions in a number of areas. They commenced last week, last Wednesday, on the 7th of July, and restrictions have been put in place on a number of schemes from 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. And those schemes are Tully, Letterfrack, Carnakilkearn, Carrow, Inishear and Rossmoke, and they are widespread restrictions. And then we have targeted restrictions then put in place on the Ballinasloe schemes and also the Mid Galway scheme. So they'll be on for a number of weeks, I would expect, given that this dry period is likely to extend.
And for the likes of Inishear, are the islands that are finding it difficult, are you having to ship water out at this stage?
That's correct. We commenced the tankering of water out to Inishear there last week, last Wednesday as well. So that'll be ongoing over the summer period. And that's a usual occurrence at this moment in time. We have started looking at, you know, a more, a better solution there, you know, and we are, have started to develop feasibility options of that to see what's the best option there to supply water to that island in the long term.
I'm not being smart, but that's an expensive option, so it is.
It's an expensive option, but it's the only viable option at the moment. What we do there during the winter is we harvest water and we store it in tanks. But obviously, it's a peculiar microclimate out there. A lot of the clouds just pass over the islands, you know, and they don't get as much rainfall as you know, across the western seaboard. In fact, it would have rainfall similar to the eastern part of the country. Wow. So something needs to happen there.
I never knew that, and I never thought about that.
That's correct.
But didn't know that. So the key message is, if you can conserve, just conserve and think of others as well. And don't be selfish and say, well, I'm going to water my own garden because I want to keep it nice and green for myself. Just think of others when you're taking the action that you're taking. You know, think if somebody did it to you and you were left without water for a couple of hours at night time to conserve, how would you feel?
Yeah, and that's true. You know, the key message for communities is, you know, we want them to enjoy the sunshine, but be mindful of water usage. Any reductions that our customers can make can collectively result in significant supply improvements for all our customers and our consumers. I would ask that everybody, you know, everybody plays their part to help to conserve water. It is it's a natural resource. You know, it's limited, and you know, we need to be mindful of it. I suppose we have excellent information on our website, www.water.ie, on water conservation. And there's also a water calculator there on this website as well, which will inform you of how much water you use generally on day-to-day usage. So that's a good calculator there. Mm-hmm. And also just to reiterate that again, to report any leaks that are out there to our customer care team on 1850 278 278.
Anthony Skeffin, and thank you so much for joining us on this Monday morning. Regional Operations Manager for Ishke Éireann, keep in contact with us, and thank you for taking our call this morning.
Thank you.
Now, I want to go back to a subject that we opened with this morning, and I said when I was reading the papers early this morning, there was a very interesting article on the front page by Gabia Gatavascata, and the political reporter with the Irish Independent, and she kindly joined us on the programme today. I want to go to Senator Ollie Crowe, who joins me on the line today. Senator Crowe, good morning to you.
Good morning, Keith.
Thanks for joining us today on the programme. You have a comment to make on the piece which we did just at 10 past nine, not about the journalist in question, but about one of the people that she spoke about.
Well, look at Keith. Good morning. I would say, first of all, that if you go through the figures in particular in 2021 and 2022, and if you add the total, it's about a refusal rate of 12% Now, relation to that, I mean, for any family to move, as you'd be aware yourself, Keith, it's a life-changing decision. You know, it's a home for life. So if you're looking at Bohemore, you're looking at Westside, you're looking at Ballinfoyle, you're looking at Claddagh, you know, the way it works, Keith, is that there's in Galway City Council now, there's two areas of preference, just two. So more or less, to make it simple to understand the process, is that there's east of the river and there's west of the river.
Yeah.
So certainly, there was certainly from Rory O'Hearn there, who seems to be a populist, in relation to a few things he said, they were incorrect. I mean, to say that it's a trivial matter to move a house and to move to a new environment, well, it's certainly not a trivial matter. And I think that needs to be corrected. And that's why I rang, and I appreciate your time taking the call. But I suppose what I want to say, Keith, Galway City Council housing section, as far as I'm concerned, are the best section in Galway City Council. They work the hardest, they work late hours, they work long hours, and okay, they're paid for it, but the fact of the matter is that they are doing all they can. And to say that, according to the size of the family unit, people don't take their home, that is not the case. Because if, just for example, if you have two adults and two children, well, then naturally you need a three-bedroom home. Galway City Council would never, ever, ever, and they're not allowed to do it under the legislation, offer a one-bedroom house to, and that was stated by Mr. O'Hearn as well, a one-bedroom house to a family unit of four. The way it works, Keith, is whatever your size of your family unit, well, if it's a two-bed, a three-bed, or four-bed, and I know you're well aware of that, but I just felt it was correct. Another thing I think that, another thing I feel, Keith, is that I think there is a bit of a myth out there that people get social housing for nothing. Do you know, and the reality is, they just take an example. If a person is on 30,000 a year, more or less, to make it simple again, they're charged, their means assessed, and they pay 20% of their wages. So just put on that record. Mm-hmm. So if they would be paying €150 a week. Now I know families in Bohemore, and I know families in Ballinfoyle that are paying over €200 a week. But that's they're still not able to afford a home. But that's the money they're paying, Keith.
No, and I get that, but I mean, when you say percentage, you start off by saying it was a percentage. Now, what percentage did you say? Was it 35%?
Yeah, no. What I said was, if you add 395, which is the offers that Galway City Council. So let's say 400, okay? Yeah. And then if you in 2022, it's 258. So say 260. So if you go 400 and 260, it's 660. And then if you add 63 and 34, well, then there's 97. That's 97. So it is about 12% of the refusal rate. And just to be very clear for the listeners, if a person refuses, it might be in relation to a dog. But I mean, if you have a dog for 10 years, Keith, or 12 years, you don't want to put, it's bad enough moving the kids from their friends, but you don't want to put away the dog, because that could have psychological effects for the children. But Mr. O'Hearn, if he wants to come on, said it was a trivial decision. Now, if you're moving house, I would no problem. If you want to do another debate next week or tomorrow, I would have no problem having a discussion with that nonsense talk.
We will give him the opportunity, but I mean, the situation is, if you take the 395 and 258 over 2 years, which, by the way, is 658 units, and if you take the 97 people who refused for valid reasons and all that, that's 14.85%.
What I'm saying about that, Keith, that 15%. So what happens is then the person that's next on the list gets offered.
Gets it, yeah. So
Mr. Hearn was trying to say that house is not.
Yeah, but he's not here to defend himself. So I mean, I have to go through the report again. But go back to what you said to me about it. Go back to what you said to me about if somebody's earning 30,000, and they have to. So they're earning 30,000, and you're saying 20% of that income is taken to go towards social housing. So
yes.
And you're saying that was €150 a week or something.
As you know, if 150 a week, but you have to multiply that by 4.3, because there's 4.3 weeks in the year. So they're actually paying 660. But in the populist and in the general domain, they try to disdain people. I come from Bohemore, as you know, and all the best of people came from Bohemore, from Westside, from Ballinfoyle, from Claddagh. They're trying to insinuate that they're not paying. They're not paying for their property. And I'm telling you here that the majority of people,
I think your maths are slightly out, because if it's
Hold on, give me
1 second without going down my throat for 1 second. If you take if you take say 30,000. So and 20% of that. That's roughly around 6,000, give or take. That's what it's coming out.
Yeah.
6,000 a year divided by 52 is €115.
Yeah. Okay, but there is 115.
Hang on one second. That's 115. So if you take it as 115, that's €460 a month, which is to a lot of families a lot of money, but it's far cheaper than HAP, indeed, that could be going into a private landlord's pocket. HAP is running at between 1,000 and 1,100 now. So you would get two of such houses if you could build quicker and get people into them. You'd be getting good value for money then as a state.
Well, I agree with that, Keith, and I agree with your point there. But can I just give you another figure that's absolutely correct? In relation to the 115, there would be other add-ons on top of that. So it would probably bring, I'm just saying, in average, I'm saying, like, I know a couple here that are in Bormore that are paying 240 a week. So I'm trying to say to you that basically, I was giving you an example there, but the average payment roughly would be between 100 and 200. But there seems to be people in across the country that think it's a disgrace that people get social housing. Now, you know, we'll be 100 years in 2032 here in Bormore, and it is, what I'm trying to say is, the way they're, a lot of people own their houses now, but that opportunity is not really available. So people are paying the rent of 600 or 650 a month, and they will never own their house. You know what I'm saying?
I get that. I came from social housing, so I don't...
I know that.
I'm not forgetting that. I came from a two-bedroom house, and there were six of us in it. So, I mean... I wanted to
correct the record. There is in no circumstances... The way it works in Galway City Council, just to be very brief, there's a one-bedroom list, there's a two-bedroom list, there's a three-bedroom list, and there's greater than three beds. So under housing legislation, you cannot offer a family a one-bedroom property. Okay? Now, the other thing I'd like to say is that in the years listed there, 2021 and 2022, the government, your taxpayers, all our taxpayers' money, there's been 25,000 social houses offered in the last 2 years. That is the highest in decades. And the fundamental point here, Keith, is from 2011 to 2020, there was no houses built in the state. Now, we weren't in government in that period of time. So I'm saying, okay, it's not going to... There's no overnight silver bullet. But I mean, in all honesty, there is significant progress. But I take issue with Rory coming on saying that the information incorrect.
He didn't come on. He was on. He was quoted by Gabby Gedevskaget in today's Irish Independent front page story on it.
I was 11 years in Galway City Council, and at no stage, that is a lack of public transport. That is absolute more rubbish and populist, because that is not the case. Because as you know, Keith, whether we're talking about Bormore, whether we're talking about Ballinfyle, whether we're talking about Westside, whether we're talking about Clara, all of them are on the bus routes. I don't know where this, I accept Gabby's report is right, but for your man to come on and just have a constant go at the government, I accept also there's things wrong, but we're getting a lot right.
Okay. No, that's my point was 600. Hang on. My point was 653 houses over a 2 year period in Galway is massive when nothing was delivered. Can I just give you some of the comments that have come in here today? Keith, this caller said they get free local property tax, free bins too, and the taxpayers are subsidising them. And hi, Keith, does Central Crowe honestly expect some families to refuse a good dry home because of a dog? Lots of families give up their family pets for the sake of the family, and it's about time. Another caller said, I'm 40 years in this house in Galway City, and Galway City Council are a joke to deal with. They're the landlords, after all, and you can't get a nail out of them, this caller said. So there you go.
There's an awful lot of the social housing tenants and people of our city, great Galwegians, that they don't get free bins. That is more, in some cases, when they'd be below, as you know, Keith, the threshold at the moment, we've got to increase there up to 40,000. So what we're doing is, and it was the minister informed me last Wednesday, it's a start. There's 200 affordable houses coming in Clare Galway. There's more housing coming in Galway City Council, affordable houses in Ballyban, in Dwiska. And what we need to do is we need stability, and we need to continue the progress that we are doing. And could I just finally say that I don't know what you think, Keith, but for someone to come on your radio station and to say to move lock, stock and barrel is a trivial decision is not correct.
Okay. You've had your say, and we acknowledge that. Senator Oliver Crow, thank you indeed for joining us today on the programme. Next, though, a lovely story has come our way from a man. You know his voice and you know his presentation extremely well. And we're looking at his Galway roots next. Stay tuned for that and more to come.
Galway Talks, in association with Tesco. Click and collect allows you to collect your order whenever suits you.
Hey, very good morning. You're welcome into today's programme. Comment lines are all open. If you want to get through to us today, we would like to hear from you. And again, you can do so to the following number, 086 38 33 55 3. And that's 086 38 33 55 3 if you want to get in contact with us. A lot of comments coming in today. Morning, Keith. Irish water, a complete joke, unfit for purpose. God help us if we ever get a real long summer of fine weather. It's going to be a disaster, this caller said. And morning, Keith. It's very easy to track down this beef. It comes in on a fridge, bulled by an Arctic. It has to go through customs at the port. All the customs or guard they have to do is follow this truck to its final destination. It's not that hard if there was a will to do so. Too many paid to look the other way, this caller said today to the program. Also today, comments wise today, Keith, this caller said, what is the situation when it comes to beef? You didn't get to the bottom of it just yet. We're not going to get to the bottom of it, by the way, either. We're just not going to get there. And another caller said, hello, Keith. Hello again, Keith. Follow on from my email about scammers. This is what I recently found out about Revolut. Russia's involvement with this awful company, the main reason why I don't trust them. Revolut was founded on 1st July 2015. And it goes on from there. The company was originally based in Level 39, a financial technology incubator in Canary Wharf in London. It began offering cryptocurrency services in 2017. And that comes from... that comes from Ian, by the way. Like, Revolut is a fine company, and as far as I am aware, there's a young man from Galway is the chief executive of Ireland and rest of Europe as well. Revolut is a fine company, but something went wrong with Alice's, but then Alice did authorise the payments. So that's where you're going with that one today. Alice just said, thanks for having me on today. Another caller said, poor Alice, that is terrible. I know another person that was scammed by thousands of euro through Revolut. And Keith, this caller said, up the cats, the Galway wall. What a joke. I'll be asking John about that. And Keith, the numbers are mostly from 083 and 089 numbers as well. So 083 and 089 numbers is where those calls are coming from. And another caller said, Keith, there's nothing like having cash in your pocket. That's what we need to do, is have cash and keep cash in our pocket altogether. Now though, let me move on today on the program. Comments are coming in hot and heavy, I have to say, today, and keep them coming into us, please, at 0917700077. My next guest, though, you'll recognise his voice, you'll know what he looks like as well, and I never realised until I was reading the brief for today's programme that Tony Connolly, who's the Europe editor for RTE, has his roots in the west of Ireland, and Tony joins me on the line today. Tony, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Great to talk to you. Did you always know there was a Galway link?
Oh, I did indeed, yeah. My father was very, attached and, closely... I suppose he was very affectionate towards his Galway links over time, and because his father, my grandfather, who's the subject of the documentary, was born in Clonina near Kilconnell, near Ballinasloe, and so that was the sort of the origin of the family. And I remember as a kid, as a very young kid, going there on the way to Roundstone for my holidays in the early 70s. and being perched on a tractor and shown how to ride it. So there was the farm was still going at that point, and there were cousins and people there. So it was a very important link for my father and for the family going back. But it was not a place that we visited very often, because, you know, my father's siblings and you know, his mother and father had all settled in Northern Ireland, and that was the same for my mother. So the kind of orientation when it came to relatives was always Northern Ireland. It was Belfast. But there was this somewhat mythical association with Galway, which was still very strong, and which, you know, thankfully I've been able to completely revive through working on this documentary.
Now, Tony Connolly's A Hidden History, the new documentary by RTE's Europe editor Tony, will air tonight, the 12th of June, 9:35, on RTE1 and RTE Player. Did you find it, as an adult, did you find it emotional?
Yeah, I mean, it sort of became a detective investigation almost, because, I mean, like, there's only so far you can get with Google, you know, and Wikipedia. So, like, you know, obviously the revolutionary period that my grandfather was part of. So he was born in 1887 in Cloonina. He went to Kerry in 1908 as a young RIC recruit, and then finished his time with the RIC in Carrick-on-Suir before going to England and then on to Northern Ireland. I didn't have much to go on. There was just a couple of photographs and family stories. I mean, I didn't even know, like, growing up for a long time, I didn't even know he was based in Carrick-on-Suir during the Risning. I had in my head that he was always in Galway. But in fact, as a recruit for the RIC, you couldn't stay where you were from. You had to be moved somewhere else.
Yeah.
But the more I learned about the challenges he faced during the revolutionary period, during the War of Independence, there are things in the documentary where we've uncovered, you know, relationships and friendships he would have had with people on the IRA side in Carrick-on-Suir. I did get a stronger sense of the upheaval and dislocation that he would have gone through with his wife, my grandmother Nora Flynn from Castle Gregory, and first of all, there were three children born in Carrick-on-Suir before partition, and then after they moved north, there were three children born in County Antrim. So I suppose I had a much more powerful sense of what he went through, and the fact that he really had to survive the revolutionary period and raise his children in that time, which was very difficult, because I suppose he was on the wrong side of history on both sides of the border. Like, he was targeted as an RIC man in the south during the War of Independence, and then in the north as a Catholic sergeant in the RUC in Larne, he was targeted for his religion, and he was accused at one point of being an IRA man, according to graffiti in the town. So I suppose it was emotional for me to step back a little bit and realize what he had gone through, and you know, what a challenge that was. And I suppose I did feel a sense of pride that he had managed to do it and raise his family, and thankfully he survived the episode and the revolutionary period. And his family, you know, went out into the world, and so I was born as a northerner, you know, not someone from Tipperary or Galway, because of the upheavals of the period.
And on the other side, in that period, just 2 years after when your granddad was born, my grandfather, and he was on the other side, that your grandfather would have been keeping an eye on if he had been in the Galway West region or the Roundstone or Macron.
His brother Jimmy was also in the IRA, you know, in East Aidan, Galway, and he was involved in the IRA up there. So at a certain point, there was a funeral that my grandfather wanted to return to when he was in Carrick-on-Suir in Galway, but he was told he wouldn't be safe if he came back. So
advise not to. It's a lovely story, but you know, it's lovely for your family. And I read a lovely article about you in one of the papers about the young family that you have. But for them, Tony, in a couple of years' time, when, say, give them 15, 20 years, when they look at this documentary, and that's where their great-grandfather came from, which is, it's going to be very special for them to do it. So we're getting interviewed at 9:35 tonight, but in years to come, they will really and truly respect that.
Yeah, no, it's it's funny to have this, you know, because I'm, you know, based in Brussels and my wife is from Denmark, and so I've got these two mixed kids who come home from school singing songs in French, you know. It's very important for me to make sure they have that knowledge of their Irish roots, and they are really interested in the documentary because they make a cameo appearance in it, actually. Mm. So they are very intrigued, and the fact that Granda's in it, and so I'm going to show it to them tonight now as well, although it might be past their bedtime. It is a great it was a great gift to be able to do this documentary, and you know, obviously. A great tribute to RTE to have the vision to do this. I mean, the documentary doesn't pull any punches, but because it's kind of a personal journey, it allows RTE to really get to grips with the nuances of the revolutionary period when it comes to the RIC. And you know, my own personal hope is that it, you know, this will just, you know, contribute to the debate. You know, like I'm not taking sides either way on who was right and who was wrong in 2020, yeah. But hopefully this will just contribute to the debate.
Listen, well done to you. Have you gone back to Roundstone, by the way, since those heady days that you stopped off?
I have. Well, my last visit to Roundstone was the day after I proposed to my wife, because I proposed to her on Inishere, and happily she said yes. So the next day we went to Roundstone to have a pint and to celebrate. I've been back to Roundstone quite a few times, and it's a fantastic place. And
it's changed totally, though, really and truly. Has now there's a lot of new people, newbies.
Well, I mean, I was there in, like, I'm giving my age away. I was there in 1972. Because of the troubles, we felt it was a bit better to go further afield on our holidays. So we went to Roundstone and had a fantastic trip there. So
a lot of people.
It has very special memories for me.
A lot of people did. I don't know. There was a family that used to come from Derry every year and stay with us in Galway just to get away from the troubles. But it was very common then, so it was. And thank God. I mean, this friendship's made for life out of it as well. Tony Connolly, yeah. Thanks for joining us. Listen, have a good day in Europe. And thank you for what you do on an ongoing basis over there to keep us fully informed. But again, further details on it, go to RT Radio or RT One. Radio 1, TV 1, set your recorder for 9:35 tonight. And again, it's a hidden history, new documentary by RTE's Europe editor, Tony Connolly, airing tonight, 9:35 on RTE 1 and the RTE player as well. Yet to come on the programme, we're looking back on sport. What happened yesterday evening, lads? Come on, 8 points down, then back up again, and then the Cats steal it from us? Huh? Which? Somebody said the wall. What wall? It was brutal. We'll be looking at that and more between now and the end of today's programme. Though, if you want to get in contact with us, 086 38 33 55 3. That's 086 38 33 55 3. If you want to get in contact with us, let's head towards news and death notices at 11. And we'll talk to you just after that.
Galway Talks, in association with Tesco. Find our award-winning Irish ranges in store and online at tesco.ie.